Good morning, everyone. It's Wednesday, and that means Arts Quincy is in the building, and we're going to start our conversation today about something that's happening in Hannibal. Even though it's Arts Quincy, the Society of Fine Arts is a wonderful, complex group of people that all work together, and Mark Twain is having his birthday. And so there's a big birthday bash going on in Hannibal Saturday, November 26th. Laura Sievert is here to tell us all about that event. Welcome.
Hi there. Yeah, we're really excited about this Hannibal event. We have just a couple of groups down in Hannibal that we have on the Arts Quincy roster, and the Mark Twain Boyhood Home just does an amazing job at putting out some, and museum do a great job of putting out some great programming for everyone. So this Saturday, November 26th, at the gallery there at 120 North Main in Hannibal, Mark Twain's celebrating his birthday, and it's kicking off with a mustache contest. Clearly, Mary and I are not qualified for the mustache contest, but if you are out there with a wonderful mustache, or maybe you can make one out of some broom handles or something, they have several categories, including the Dapper Stash and, of course, the Mark Twain. So that's the kickoff of the event.
I think our very own Jim Dewey should be entered.
Oh, clearly.
He has one of the best mustaches. He's got a handlebar mustache, so it's really wonderful. So.
And I feel like he could win a prize with that. I really do.
He could, but everybody come out and challenge Jim.
That's right.
It's only a $5 entry fee, and you can parade your mustache at 1 o'clock and see who's the winner.
There's also a masquerade mask and exhibit and contest. There is a live radio theater performance. They're doing a radio play called Huck. You can either watch it live there. There are tickets available to watch the radio live or to, of course, listen on the radio. And last but certainly not least, there's a great local artisans craft fair, and that's kind of in conjunction. This is Saturday in Hannibal, so it's conjunction with Shop Local Saturday. So, you know, lots of great things going on at the Mark Twain Museum.
Absolutely. So for more information, just go to their website, Mark Twain Museum, or give them a call at 573-221-9010. All day Saturday, the annual birthday bash taking place down in Hannibal for Mark Twain, and the festivities continue into the evening with some entertainment at local establishments, and we'll just leave it at that. Then on Sunday, we're back in Quincy for another great Sunday music series, and it's at a little bit different place this time.
That's right. It's at Calvary Baptist Church at the 18th and State, and this Sunday music series is going to feature harpist Sarah Javeau. Sarah is just an amazing harpist. She's got a master's degree in harp from Temple University out in Philadelphia, and so talented. So what I say is your family's in town this weekend anyway. Take them down to Hannibal to the Mark Twain Bash. Bring them back, look at some art exhibits, and then go see harpist Sarah Javeau with this free Sunday music opportunity.
4 o'clock at Calvary Baptist Church at 18th and State. And just absolutely fantastic that this young lady is giving of this talent absolutely free of charge. And the Quincy Public Library, we often don't think about all the things they have so quickly. When we're heading into the holiday season, today, for example, they have craft time from 1 to 3 for the kiddos. They've always got something going on at the library, and a lot of people aren't aware of what a great children's program they have. So get down and explore the library. They've got homebound delivery. They've got all kinds of things for people.
They sure do. And one of the things I like to point out right now is if you're getting an e-reader, a Kindle or whatever for Christmas, or you're giving one, you can check out e-books and magazines at the library. So, get down there and see all of these great technological things that are available. You don't have to even go in to check out those e-books. You can actually download their app and then put in your library card number, and there you have, right down to your Kindle, a brand new book. So any time of day, you don't have to wait for the hours of the library to make that happen.
That's right. They're making it so high tech that you don't even have to go to the library anymore. You can, and it's wonderful, and I do. But you can read. If you have a lot of reading time this weekend, just get out that Kindle and your Quincy Public Library card, and you can download without even going down to the library.
Sure can.
You can read as many books you want this week, and it's really a wonderful thing. Well, Laura, you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We will see you again next Wednesday, and always look forward to what's happening at Arts Quincy. And again, if you want any information about anything happening in our area, artsquincy.org is the place to go. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving.
We'll be back in 1 minute with Brent Engel, noted author. His latest work is about a history of his hometown, Augusta. The dulcet tones of Bruce Hornby in the Range playing behind as we say good morning to Brent Engel, patiently waiting on the phone. At least he better be. Good morning, Mr. Mary. Engel. Hey, happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
And happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody who's hardworking there at the Star Radio Group. We appreciate all you do.
Well, it is wonderful. Brent is usually contacting me about his professional working job, which is with NECAC, but he is also a playwright and an author and just a general good guy all around. And his latest book is about his hometown of Augusta, Illinois. And several things I learned, the very first words written, Augusta is Latin for magnificent. Who would have known?
So we're already talking about greatness, you know. You don't even have to read the book, right? You don't even have to visit.
That's right.
No, go ahead and do those things because I want you to.
Now, we've got to walk a very thin line here because we don't want to give away too much because we want people to buy your book, but we also want to intrigue them with some of the headlines, and you've got some funny ones. You're a good writer, and I appreciate that about you. But I want to start off with one of the chapters in the book is about a visit from Lincoln, and you talk about what happened, but then you also go into the fact that nobody is really quite sure the exact day he came. It's kind of been lost to history. Some people think it was one day. Other people think it's the day after. Some people think it was nearby those days, but we're not really sure. And one of the things I enjoyed about your book, Brent, was you had a picture of you and your son, Adam, there in Augusta. And so I want to know, does Adam share your fondness for historical facts and figures, or is it just another, oh, Dad, not again?
Well, he does both. He plays both sides of the fence, Mary. One day he'll be thrilled with history, like when we're visiting the Lincoln sites, and the next it'll be, Dad, we got to go back to the Missouri History Museum in St. Louis. Oh, come on. But when we get there, all of a sudden things open up for him. They got a new exhibit on toys. He was having trouble with a slinky, so the old man had to show him how to do it.
So your cool factor went up that you knew how to operate a slinky.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, you know, I think it's very important that we know where we come from. And as you know, because you live down in Louisiana, Missouri area now, my dad hails from there. So I'm always fascinated about, you know, stories of Louisiana, Missouri. And I've collected a few of in our family archives over the years. It's kind of a great honor that you're honoring Augusta with these tales. And so let's talk a little bit about how you did the research for this, because you rely heavily on newspaper accounts and, when possible, people that were there, although you can't go back to 1825 to find anybody who was there when Hancock County was founded. So how do you do the research on something like this?
Well, the first place I started was with a wonderful book called Augusta's Story, and it was put together in 1921 by the Martha Board chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, obviously a group that's very interested in history. And the last member of that committee, of the committee that was organized to put together that book, died in 1974. So I knew her. I knew who she was. I never got a chance to talk to her, you know, more than just a hello or something like that, because I was only 11 years old when she died. But I was always intrigued by it. My father had a copy of this book, and I've learned since then that they're so rare now. A neighbor of mine bought a copy a couple of years ago for $400. So that shows you how important Augusta's history is to a lot of people. This rare book, I have a copy of it, so that's where I started. And then, of course, I delved into newspaper files, both Quincy, the Quincy Public Library, as you were mentioning earlier in the segment, a great place to do lots of stuff. You could do it online, and I did a lot of research there, finding old newspapers, Quincy newspapers. And then the Augusta Eagle is on microfilm, or many of the copies of the Augusta Eagle are on microfilm, dating back to about 1900. So I used the resources of the public library in Augusta to help me out, too. So it's been a labor of love, and I know that's a trite cliche, but it really has been something that I was definitely interested in, because I've heard stories in the past, but researching them and getting into it really helped expand my appreciation for my hometown.
Well, I want to tell you folks, if you're listening, and grab a pencil, because we're going to give you a chance to find out how you can get this book. And gee whiz, it may be worth $400 someday. So make sure you hang on to your copy and keep it in good shape. I love the way you write, because obviously there are some murders and some out of wedlock children and things that are quite scandalous and scurrious. But the way you write is so interesting. For example, one of the things you say, this minister could sing like a canary, chirp like a finch, and ogle women like a hawk. So I like that. I like that.
That's
also
a former minister at the Christian Church in Augusta who was probably more con man than cleric. Let's put it that way.
And you lay the case for both, the devil or the angel, and so that's kind of one of the interesting stories. I also like the story of Sadie Rings, pain in her heart, revenge on her mind, dynamite in her hand. I was introing who was going to be on my show earlier this morning, and Steve Bull just doubled over in laughter when he heard that, because, you know, how melodramatic that can be. So you've got some really good, shocking murder mysteries and con man stories in the book. But one of the things that struck me from a historical standpoint, too, is something that happens that takes a long time to come to fruition and then has long-term after effects. And that was probably the most fateful day, perhaps, in Augusta history. I speak of March 1973, when the Dennis Chicken Products factory closed down. Augusta had been a thriving community. I mean, all these small communities were basically built up on the railroad line, and the Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy Railroad came through Augusta, and that helped the town really grow. But once your major industry closes down, just as Quincy lost Motorola, you never really quite rebound from that. You come back, but you're never quite like what you were.
I remember Motorola closing, and, you know, even though it was Quincy, it had effects on Augusta because there were some Augusta people who worked there. Imagine a plant, your only major employer, the largest employer by far, more than 130 jobs, just shutting down and going away overnight. It was profoundly affected Augusta. It was a facility that employed a lot of women, too. That's what people don't really realize. You know, this was a time in America when women just didn't work much outside the home. Yes, during World War II they had to, but then after the war was over, they went back to their household duties, and it was just terrible because there were, in some cases, two paychecks lost when Dennis closed down. And frankly, there were economical impacts here, but I blame intrusion by the government. I mean, a little bit too strong on the environmental standards. You know, when you crack down on a company that's providing work, and the state even admitted that this was by far Augusta's largest employer and the economic lifeblood of the community, I find it very difficult to justify that. You know, there has to be some way, some arrangement can be worked out so that the plant can continue. And I just think it was something Augusta never did recover from. And, you know, we talk about history and the importance of it. Let me give you an example. The picture that you'll find in the book of the old Dennis superstructure and the loading docks, I was in Augusta over the weekend for a family Thanksgiving. Those loading docks are gone now. Just in the space of, I took that picture in June, just in a few months, 5 months, that part of history is gone. Reluctantly, I don't have a picture, and there are people in Augusta who do, I'm sure, have pictures of the old Dennis plant, even some of the workings inside of it. Keep those. Treasure those histories. Write it down. Save it. Preserve it. We need it.
Yeah, the Dennis Chicken Products plant shut down in March of 1973, and, you know, you talk a lot about murder in the book, and in a way, this was an economic murder for Augusta, because as you detail in the book, the Environmental Protection Agency had found some legitimate complaints with the plant. They were emitting too much fat and too much waste, and it was showing up, you know, in natural water streams and stuff. So obviously some correction had to be made, but could they have given them more time, or could they have, you know, been a little bit more lenient? When the plant was at its apex, the whole town of Augusta really revolved around Dennis Chicken. And you mentioned for a lot of people it was off-farm income to supplement farming. It was work that women could do, you know, considered women's work at the time, and yet earn a paycheck and be, you know, more self-sufficient or help their family. When the Dennis Chicken plant closed in March of 1973, what was the population of Augusta at that time, and what happened to Augusta, say, in the next 1 year, 2 years, 5 years after the closing?
Well, the population at the time was around 900 to 1,000. It's now around 600. So that just shows you right there what has happened in the past 40 years. But one other, and we talk about, you know, how things go and how the ebb and flow of history. One thing that was good, and it didn't appear to be at the time, was the fire that destroyed Southeastern High School in 2006.
Right.
You know, a lot of people thought, oh, my gosh, you know, that's terrible, that's horrible. What are we going to do? Well, the school was rebuilt. Thankfully, it was rebuilt because at the time, and I don't know the full inside track on this, I'd love to study it some more, but, you know, a lot of schools in the area were considering consolidation. And had that building not burned and been rebuilt, Augusta might have lost its school. And if that would have happened, that currently is the largest employer in town. If that would have happened, Augusta really would have suffered.
You know, that railroad line and that school, those are the two things that determine whether a town can hang on. And, of course, highways now instead of the rail line. But it's funny, in your book, you talk about the founding of Augusta and how, in a way, Augusta didn't really take preeminence in Hancock County until the CB&Q made their stake. Now, Brent, I'm going to ask you, can you stay with me until 10 o'clock, or do you have to go?
No, I can stay.
Okay, good. Why don't you give us how we can order your book, and then we're going to have to take a break, and you'll hang on, and we'll be back to continue the conversation. But how can we get the book?
Well, you can call me anytime at 573-754-2022, and I'm going to hold a book signing, which I'll tell you all about after the break.
Okay. So, folks, if you want this book, if you know anybody who has ever lived in Augusta, what a wonderful Christmas present to send them so that they can reminisce after they have moved away, or anybody who has great interest in the history of West Central Illinois, 573-754-2022 to order Brent Engel's book. We're back at Talk Radio 930, WTAD, 942 our time. My guest today is author Brent Engel. Brent has written several books. He's written several plays. He is, I wouldn't even call him an amateur historian because, I mean, he writes books, so he gets paid for being a historian. So he's a professional writer, let's face it, more than I can say about myself. And he's been a longtime friend of mine for many, many years as we share a love of journalism. And his latest book is available by calling him at 573-754-2022. But let's talk about the book signing that's coming up.
Yes, we're going to have a book signing from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday, December 3rd. That's going to be at the place where I did a lot of this research. I'm going to bug them again, the Augusta Library, 202 Center Street, just a half block north of the four-way stop. When you get to the four-way stop, you'll see the mural on your left on the building there. Just turn left and go a half block to the library. It's on your right. We'll do a book signing from 10 to 1. The best librarians in the entire universe have graciously agreed to let me hang around for 3 hours. I can't believe it, but it'll be a great event. You can come and pick up, buy a book, and talk a little bit. Share some of your stories about it, guest. I want to hear more. Because, you know, this could probably be volume one. I call it A Few Augusta Stories. I can always write another one that says A Few More Augusta Stories.
You've got that right, and there always are a few more stories. Anytime you write one book, it just begs to have another book written. So Saturday, December 3rd, and the hours again?
10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Okay. So, folks, a delightful man to meet in person is Brent Engel, and if you've got stories to share with him, I'm sure he's got stories to share with you. Well, as I said, we don't want to give it all away because I've read the book. I didn't read every word of it, but I read a lot of it. Again, you've got great, great writing style. But a lot of people, one of the things they like to do is go visit old cemeteries. And I guess if you go to the cemetery in Augusta, you can look for the grave marker with a lion on top. Why is there a lion on the top of a grave in Augusta?
Well, yeah, it's on the very east side of Augusta Cemetery. There are two in Augusta. Woodlawn is south of town, but it's part of a little section I call They're Buried Here. And a guy named George Sears was a lion tamer. He was with a variety of circus troops. He died in Augusta on March 27th, 1868. He was 32. He had tuberculosis, like a lot of people did then. But his marker has a lion on top of it.
Now, this was back in the day when you couldn't laser etch that kind of stuff. This had to be carved by hand, didn't it?
Exactly, and it looks pretty good still. It's held up pretty well, even though it has been damaged a little bit. The lion's face is a little bit damaged, but you can tell that it's a big cat sitting on top of that tombstone.
Well, that's interesting. Well, I'll have to find out who did the tombstone. Maybe it was our good friends at Harrison Monuments. Who knows? So,
exactly.
You
never know.
There may be a tie-in there. And again, you know, cemeteries are a great place to go looking for historical starts, because sometimes they'll put why people died and, you know, murdered at the hand of another or, you know, something like that. One of the stories that you have in the book that is really sensational is about an out-of-wedlock child. Now, this happened it was interesting because it was actually a crime to father a child out of wedlock. I mean, it wasn't just something that happened and people said, shame on you. This guy was arrested for this, right?
Yes, this was a very interesting case. Edward Hathaway and Lucy Newenham, nowadays it'd be yawn. Everybody would yawn. Well, maybe everybody except a lawyer, of course, because there'd be money involved. But this unfolded in November of 1904. So it hasn't been that long ago. I mean, a little bit more than 100 years ago. But Mr. Hathaway was arrested on the crime of bastardy, which meant he fathered a child out of wedlock. And he even had to have an Augusta banker bail him out with an $1,100 bond. That's the equivalent of almost $30,000 today, which really seems extraordinarily high, you know, just for having a kid out of wedlock. But that was the law back then. And the case ended up, I'm not going to give it all away, but the case did end up pretty badly for all involved. But it's one of those things that just popped out at me when I was doing research about how this guy could be arrested for the crime of bastardy.
Yeah, you know, and of course you have real crime in Augusta. Every town has a spectacular murder. You've had a couple of them. You know, every town has, like you said, maybe a con man preacher, whether permanently placed or with a traveling tent show that comes in. But each town also has a different way that they deal with things. And it is amusing to read old newspaper accounts, because things that, you know, here we are in the midst of a heroin epidemic now, you know, in the Quincy area. Back then it was, you know, young boys on Halloween with tomfoolery pranks and stuff like that. It harkens back to a, you know, a kinder, gentler day. And yet, anytime there are a group of people together, there's always some kind of mischief going on, isn't there?
Exactly. And that's one of the things I like people to take from this is that, you know, I've always contended that history is a lie. Really, there isn't that much difference between us today and them yesterday. You know, we're living, breathing people who have happiness, sadness, foibles, and all kinds of emotions. And that's what I try to convey in the book. Yes, there's sadness. Yes, there's crime. But there's also humor, and there are also positive things that happen in life. I mean, one of the things I do is three pages of what I call short takes, which is humorous anecdotes. So one of them, I describe the definition of happiness. Do you want to know what the definition of happiness is, Mary?
I would love to know it.
The happiest creature in this world of sin and death is an Augusta girl with a bonbon box and an engagement ring. That's from June of 1889. Now, whether that girl remained happy after she got married, I don't know. But, you know, there's also the case of a certain Romeo who played for the a team called the Augusta Jackrabbits. They played a game of ball with the Bowen Knotheads. Well, the game was won by Bowen by a score of 7-6. And on the way back to Augusta, some of the girls and boys rode in Charlie Elby's truck, and Dick Green put his arms around Marjorie Martin and Fern Pierce. We had lots of fun, it said. Well, you know what? Maybe you should have scored earlier, Romeo.
I like the name of the team, though, the Bowen Knotheads?
The Bowen Knotheads. Yeah, Bowen, Illinois, the Knotheads play the Augusta Jackrabbits.
Oh, well, you have several stories in there about baseball games and even the Harlem Globetrotters.
The Harlem Globetrotters came to Augusta during the Great Depression. Imagine that. And a man who has been around baseball for more decades than anybody can count, Dave Swisegood, is still involved in baseball in Augusta. There's a tribute to him at the corner of West Green and Main Street as you turn to go to the high school. But I mentioned him. He's the all-time record holder in Illinois for baseball, for high school baseball victories.
That is amazing. Now, of course, you start the story, as every story should start, with the very beginning and the founding. Hancock County, named for John Hancock in January of 1825, and then the city of Augusta, named for Augusta, Georgia, Latin for magnificent, coming along about 1832. And you take us up almost to the present day. Let's talk a little bit about your personal recollections. What was it like growing up in Augusta, and how did maybe your boyhood adventures, how are they more similar or less similar to your son's?
Well, let me start by saying I recently saw an article about 2 weeks ago that said only about 9% of us still have that childhood friend that we first met way back when. Well, guess what? I just talked to him on Sunday. We keep in touch. He's an over-the-road trucker named Jim Hedrick, who drives from southern Illinois out to California every week and back. But we communicate often, and he's in touch with another truck driver, a classmate of ours who lives in Augusta, Kevin Kirker. So, you know, those bonds remain. Jim and I met on our tricycles when we were 2 years old, and we've known each other for more than 50 years now. So I think that says something about the qualities Augusta instills. You know, I had a great childhood. I had great parents. Both were high school teachers, very faith-minded, very concerned about their community and the people in it. And it's just great that I had that chance to go to one of the oldest schools that was still in operation in Illinois at the time, and experience all that I experienced in Augusta. Yes, it's not what it was when I grew up there, and I've been gone for quite a few years, but it's still home, and it will always have a place in my heart.
Do you feel your son shares the same sentiments about his home now?
I think he does, and I think I'm trying to instill some of that in him. And, yeah, he'll give me the eye roll and go, oh, gosh, Dad, what are you working on now? And I say, well, you know, another history. But he understands it. And I think he's gotten a lot out of it, especially Champ Clark, because, you know, Champ Clark from Bowling Green almost became president
right.
in 1912. And so that history is still here and still very much alive. And I'm on the Champ Clark Honeycheck board now. Honeycheck was his home on what is now Champ Clark Drive. So I think Adam has learned from his old man a few things about history, and hopefully those will catch on and be important to him in the future.
Well, folks, we just touched it. Meade's Milkweed and Meade's Sedge are some of the things that are named after people from Augusta. They had the bank that printed its own money for a while, the railroad coming through. Of course, we talked about the Dennis Chicken Plant. So much to talk about. You got to get the book. It's called A Few Augusta Stories. It's by Brent Engel, Augusta native. He will be signing his book on Saturday, December 3rd in Augusta at the Augusta Library from 10 until 1. And, of course, if the line is out the door, he'll stay after 1. Saturday, December 3rd at the Augusta Library. chance to get this man's signature on a book, and I foresee even greater things for him in the future, so hold on to it. It may be worth a lot of money someday. If you get to Augusta and you get to the four-way stop, you're only a half a block away from the library, so you can't miss it, folks. And if you can't...
Well, if there is a crowd out the door, here's a story from 1886. A crowd of ruffians in Augusta is making that town notorious, and if the good citizens of Augusta do not put a stop to their outrageous conduct, they may be sorry.
But that wasn't about you and your friends, right?
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, it is from 1886, not 1986.
You missed it. Folks, if you can't make it up to the Augusta Library on Saturday, December 3rd from 10 to 1, you can order the book by calling Brent at 573-754-2022. That's 573-754-2022. Brent, I'd leave you today because we're out of time, but I know Thanksgiving Day you're going to be serving turkey dinner, I guess, at your church, right, down in Louisiana.
Yeah, my sister church, Centenary United Methodist. Anybody can come. Come on by. We'll serve you a great meal.
Okay. You have a great Thanksgiving. Always great to talk to you, Brent. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.